It's the Central Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Each month on the show, usually on the second Wednesday, we welcome Mayor Bill Peduto to the program. Today, there are many topics to hit, and we're excited to have him here for the entire hour. Mayor Peduto's getting hydrated. He knows it's going to be a grueling 60 minutes. Welcome back. How are you?
I got my aqua. I'm good. I'm good. I wish there was a little more sunshine. It seems like it's been April for the past month, and I don't know.
Are people complaining to you? Are they coming to you and saying, Mayor Peduto, why aren't you doing something to address this weather situation?
No.
Good. Yeah, well, there's hope for Pittsburgh after all.
I'm still trying to explain that Butler Street is a PennDOT project, and that's why it's taking forever. And by the way, when it rains, you can't pave. So people are complaining about the conditions of the roads, but we can't get the crews out because it's raining. And if you try to pave while it's raining, then you're going to have the asphalt falling apart in 2 years. So, So sometime this summer, I'm hoping we get a little bit of a break and we're able to do the projects. And hopefully PennDOT will finish Butler Street in that same time period.
Well, let's hope so. If you have a comment or question for the mayor, you can join us at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email is essspgh@wesa.fm. On Twitter, at essspgh. Again, the number, 412-246-2002. Mayor Peduto, let's begin with your announcement that the city is suing the Intergovernmental Cooperation Authority over the $10 million from state gambling revenue currently being held by the ICA, which has financial oversight of the city. Yesterday, City Controller Michael Lamb criticized that move, saying a lawsuit isn't the way to go and that you need to sit down and talk to them. What is your response to Mr. Lamb's criticism?
Well, it's interesting because, as the controller knows, we have meetings twice a month. We have meetings. His office is there. The DCED is there. Act 47 is there. When the oversight board decides they want to do their job, they actually show up at the meetings. And twice a month, we have everybody working together on a five-year financial plan that is keeping us better than what we even scheduled to do. And we have updates every month on the ERP system. And he knows this. So I don't know why he said that. The second part of it is we didn't want to pursue a lawsuit, but they continually play games. They have not released $1 of money since the January 2014 when I took office. And their mission is to promote the financial health of the city. And by law, they're able to withhold the gambling money only when we break from the five-year plan or when there is a situation where we're overspending or maybe not receiving the proper revenue. I'm not even sure if they could do it for that purpose. Throughout these year and a half, they've requested more and more information from us than they've ever requested under three previous mayors. We've done it all. We gave them over 1,000 pages of information last November, even though they have no authority on things like the medics contract. And they keep extending in their power and their authority beyond what is given to them. So at this point, we still haven't seen a dollar since I took office in January. We're still being asked to do things that we're not required to do, but we do it anyways. We waste so much time and they waste so much taxpayers' money that we're basically now at the situation where we have to say enough. No more games. You have a mandate. We have a mandate. We've fulfilled ours. You've broken the law on yours. Now we'll have a judge just to come in and clear this mess up.
Why has there been so much tension between the city and the ICA, and why are they doing what they're doing?
The ICA is a political organization. The Act 47 is a policy organization, and people don't understand the difference. And that's really, you have to understand why everyone was trying to get rid of the Act 47. Act 47 is run by organizations that work in municipal finance. They're professionals. They do this throughout the country. They understand bond ratings and issues, and they understand the technology that's involved to cities and systems. And Act 47 works with us to promote a strong, viable city under limited revenue. ICA are five political appointees, and at this point, there's only three. They're appointed by the head Republican of the Senate, the head Republican of the House, the governor, the head Democrat of the Senate and the head Democrat of the House. They don't have backgrounds in finance and municipal finance or bonds. They're political appointees that basically, and what we're looking at now is Discovery, spend money that is allocated by the state, sometimes without even the proper bidding process, and basically act, well, I think it was Senator Furlow that said, as a slush fund.
So in fairness to what Mr. Lamb and the people who agree with him are saying, does he have a point when he says that the city could be doing a better job of communicating on this? You mentioned, I think it was twice a month.
Twice a month we have meetings. We pull together all the people that are involved in the city's financial stake. The city, the mayor's office, our budget office, our finance office, the city council, the controller's office, the state DCED, Act 47, the ICA. Twice a month we go through all of the different expenditures, all the different revenues to make sure that within 5 years we're out of Act 47 and we're out of financial distress for real. Not in some posing game, but the city's finances are stable for at least a decade more. A history here. I was on city council, I was the only person that called for Act 47 back in 2003. And I was widely criticized. Even the Post-Gazette editorial board said it would send the wrong signal that the city is seeing some prosperity now, and this would, nobody will invest in the city. And how awful of that I would even suggest it. In 2003, in November, I finally got a second on city council with Alan Hertzberg to even have the discussion. And by 2004, Mayor Murphy was on board and through a very contentious 5-4 vote. 5-4. There were only 5 members of council that supported it. It was opposed by Tawanda Carlisle, Lenny Bodak, Jim Motznick, Luke Ravenstahl. 5-4 vote, we got Act 47. And we had a hope that we'd be able to save our finances. 5 years later, as finance chair, I wrote that 5-year plan. 5 years later, I was the only person to stand up and say, we have to stay under Act 47. We're not ready. It's like being on the operating table and telling the doctor, hey, I feel good.
Well, you said that when you were campaigning for mayor.
You
emphasized that.
15-year history of trying to straighten the city's finances out. For the controller to say that there is not a communication because there's a political organization called the ICA that's trying to hold this city hostage, and for the controller's own campaign to be financed by the chair of the ICA and his friends, is at best hypocritical.
There has been, of course, a discussion about a joint city-county payroll system. When will that, it's been delayed, I guess. When will it be in place?
So we took over, and this, it's called an ERP system. And, you know, it's every financial, every organization, every company and everyone else has these systems that run everything. And the first part of ours was a payroll system. And again, through a contract with a California company that doesn't even do the business that we awarded the contract for $250,000, the ICA picked this company. We were 2 years behind, and when we started to uncover, what we found was over $1 million in cost overruns for a $250,000 contract that never went to city council for approval. That they were writing these checks, and the oversight at that point was the city controller and the county controller. So we asked for meetings with this company to say, how can you be $1 million over budget on $250,000? Their response is, we need $250,000 more, and we need 8 months to complete this project. So we started digging. We'd found things that didn't seem right. And so we canceled the contract. And we put out a new bid and hired a new company. And then at the same time, we started an internal audit of how the hell this even happened. Where was the oversight on this? It turned out a lot of different things. And the document's public, and it's on the city's website for anyone who wants to go through it. But with the new company, we're now on track to have it done by the end of the year, having it done on budget, and for the first time have oversight over this. Now, the ICA is saying, it's not done yet. We're not going to give you your money. Where the hell were they for the past 2 years when all this money was just going out the door? Why weren't they screaming about why this company out of California was able to get a $250,000 contract and overbill us another $1 million and never even having those invoices come before city council? And yet they put a gun to our head and say, you have to continue with this company and this contract, or else we're not going to give you your money. We're not playing these games anymore. We'll go to a judge. We'll go into a court. We'll do discovery. And they can answer for how these contracts and contractors were selected.
Mayor Bill Peduto, our guest on Essential Pittsburgh for the entire hour today. You can join the conversation at 412-246-2002. Let's go to Jim in Squirrel Hill with a question. Jim, welcome. You're on with Mayor Peduto.
Thank you very much. How you doing, Mayor Peduto?
Doing pretty good, Jim.
Good, good, good. I had a question for you. Because if I recall correctly, the way the city charter is written up, it's supposed to be a strong mayor and the major policy issues are supposed to be dealt with from your office. And as you know, that there are an inordinate number of 501c3s in the city proper that allege to be involved in economic development, and probably almost the same number involved in workforce training. Do you think it would be a good idea to get a complete and comprehensive list of those organizations so that they could be brought in line with the policies and priorities of your office?
That's a great question. You know, when we took office, we wanted to start doing what was called a fixed asset management system. Basically, find everything that you own. Do a baseline of what its basic needs are, and then come up with a 10-year plan to be able to take care of it. We didn't have a list of the buildings. There was no list of the city's buildings when we started. This is a year ago. So we put together what we could cobble department by department. And even then, when we put it all together, we found buildings were missing off the list. So we finally have a list.
There's been some real, you pointed this out before, there's some real inventory issues.
Huge. I mean, it's ridiculous. I don't even, you know, to get the list of the steps, we have to use a book that was written by an author about the steps of Pittsburgh. We have our street maintenance program, and we found there were city streets that weren't on it. I mean, how do you get your street plowed or paved? What Jim brings up is along the same idea. We have all of these groups out there that either do or claim to do workforce development, economic development, marketing, communications for this city and for the region. But there really isn't anything that I know of right now. Can't think. I'm thinking about it, but no. That really pulls it together. We do it with our community organizations, but not on a larger scale. I think that's something that we should be looking at. I think that's a pretty good idea.
City Councilman Corey O'Connor has introduced a bill that would guarantee workers in Pittsburgh the right to earn paid sick days. The National Federation of Independent Business, which claims to represent 15,000 small businesses in Pennsylvania, strongly opposes this bill. Explain, Mayor, if you would, why you are supporting it.
Yeah, it's amazing to me that there are still companies that don't offer their employees sick days. That if somebody is recovering from cancer and she needs to go see her doctor to make sure that things are okay, that she either has to take a vacation day or has to go into work and try to schedule around her life to be able to save her life. And you know, I don't know if I'd want to work for a company that believes that that is a proper business decision, because it really goes against your own workers. Anytime we get involved in any sort of a business workforce issue, it always comes down to the government's rules not to get involved. Well, they said the same thing in the 1880s about 12-year-olds working in factories and working down in mines. That's not the government's job. If the kid wants to work and he needs to work, then he should work. No, he shouldn't. He should be in school and getting an opportunity for a life, not potential of dying in a mill or a mine. These issues are being discussed around the country. Places like Philadelphia already have it as law. It is not taking away jobs. People aren't losing jobs. Places aren't becoming less business friendly because of it. What's happening are people have the ability to take care of their basic needs, and their first basic need is health.
Do you see this, as others do, as more than just an economic issue? As a moral issue as well?
No, there's a very strong belief in a 19th century model of a single bottom line that Adam Smith professed. And people still profess it, even though we're in the 21st century, that everything is based upon profit. And no matter how many widgets you make and what everything else is an externality. It doesn't matter what that person making the widgets does or anything else. It doesn't matter about the pollution that comes out of that smokestack, because that's just an externality. It's not part of the profit that you make. Well, government operates on a triple bottom line. And every time that we invest, or we support, or we're a part of a decision, our bottom line comes down to, sure, it needs to make money, but it also has to help people and minimize the impact to the planet. And that is the model that we make our decision around. When we created P4, which became a global summit with Andre Hines, the idea was that in decision-making of city government, we'll now look at it as people, planet, performance, and place. And those are the metrics we decide. When Mellon Bank decides to give a loan, or PNC decides to give a loan to a developer, they're looking at, will the rate of investment be worth us investing it in for our shareholders? When we decide to use an RCAP or a TIF or public money, somebody else's taxpayers' money to help private, we want to make sure that all four of those measurements are happening. That's our rate of investment of making Pittsburgh the type of place people want to live and giving people a quality of life and enhancing the environment. That is what P4 means. And this discussion is happening around the world, in cities around the world. And our goal is to make sure Pittsburgh is part of that discussion. In a small way, this initiative that Councilman O'Connor is pushing is saying that we all need to be partners. Not just city government, but the companies that call Pittsburgh home. And that means taking care of your workers and making sure that they have the adequate time to take care of themselves.
We're talking with Pittsburgh Mayor Bill Peduto here on this edition of Essential Pittsburgh. He is here for the entire hour. Much more to talk about, and you can join the conversation at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email esspgh@wesa.fm. On Twitter at ESSPGH. Lots of Twitter comments coming in. We'll get to those and more coming up. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and we are devoting our entire show today to a visit with Pittsburgh Mayor Bill Peduto, who regularly joins the program on the second Wednesday of every month. Mayor Peduto, your first visit to Essential Pittsburgh in 2015 began with you receiving the news, literally as you walked into our studio, that the National Rifle Association was suing the city of Pittsburgh over its gun laws and forcing taxpayers to pay the legal costs if the challenge was successful. Pennsylvania's Commonwealth Court voided that law last week that gave the NRA the right to do that. What is your reaction?
Well, first is, what a waste of taxpayers' money to even fight these battles. This is strike four now, where we've had to fight the unconstitutional acts coming out of Harrisburg. You know, it was who could vote and what you had to do to vote, even though we had been through those battles in the 50s and the 60s. They passed laws of requiring people to have IDs, and that was thrown out by the court saying it was unconstitutional. We had oil and gas industry can drill wherever they want to drill. The zoning laws aren't permitted for local governments, even though we've never done that with any industry ever in the state's history. And we had to take that to the courts, and they threw it out saying it was unconstitutional. Then it was who could marry. You know, it wasn't even really marry, but who could get a marriage license. It would be like telling people who are left-handed you can't get a fishing license because you're left-handed. And we had to take that to the court, and that was thrown out by a appointee who was appointed by George Bush at the recommendation of Rick Santorum, you know, one of those judges who legislates from the bench, as being unconstitutional. And now, again, with another law that they put, they actually added it to a scrap metal bill,
right,
and added this whole thing in. And I'll go over the craziness of the bill in a second, but that's four times now those who say they defend the Constitution and this president's against the Constitution, four times that we've had to waste taxpayer money to throw away the garbage that they're trying to put through that's unconstitutional in the state of Pennsylvania. Four times. That should be not just an article in a newspaper. That should be a book about, and this is happening around the country with these, you know, emails that come from these think tanks that push these agendas and create these legislative issues, and these ultra-conservative legislators push it under the guise of being pro-America, but they're unconstitutional. It's It's amazing. So anyways, that's the first thought. That's like, again, we have to fight this battle. The second, and by the way, there were only a few. There was Mayor Gray in Lancaster, Mayor Nutter in Philadelphia, and I said, hell no, we're going to fight for the Constitution. We're going to fight against those who are trying to steal rights away from people. And we're going to wrap ourselves up in that flag and say, no, we're taking it to court. You're not going to get to do this. This is what this bill would have done. It said that any municipality that had passed lost and stolen handguns, which, by the way, doesn't affect one person's ability of buying a gun, buying 10 guns, or buying 100 guns. It just says that when that gun is stolen or lost, you have to report it, just as you would if your car was or your TV. And why would we do that? Because when we end up with dead bodies on our streets and our police recover those guns, we can trace them back to where they came from. And every time the person will say, oh, it was stolen. Oh, I lost it. And it's a get out of jail free card. And we're taking out that loophole. We know that there's an illegal gun trade going on in our cities. And we're letting the people who are selling those guns off the hook. So they say, if you pass that, the NRA now has standing to sue you. Well, why would they have to pass a law to do that? Because the NRA does not have standing because they're not directly affected by the law. And for the first time ever in Pennsylvania's history, the state legislature gave a party without standing the ability to sue. That's never happened before. Oh, by the way, that's not all. Not only that, but you will be responsible for all their legal costs, whether they win or lose, meaning that the NRA will go to court against us if we have that bill on the books, and they'll hire 50 attorneys from New York City, and the taxpayers in Pittsburgh will have to pick up the bill even if they lose, meaning you better get that bill off your books or else we're going to bankrupt you. What a great state legislature to try to help cities that are trying to lower murder rates in the town by getting illegal guns off the street. We're not telling anyone you can or cannot own a gun. We're not telling you can or cannot own any type of gun. We're not telling you you can or can't own as many guns as you want. But my God, what we're saying is there is a direct correlation to an illegal gun trade and a rise in murder.
So this wasn't just about having to pay the legal costs if the challenge was successful, even if they lose, which I think some people didn't realize.
Which basically meant we're going to sue all of you, and we're going to make you pay the bills, and we're going to run up the bills so that you have to. And every city crumbled. They just said, we're not going to fight this. We can't afford it. And I spoke with Mayor Gray in Lancaster, and I spoke with Mayor Nutter in Philadelphia, and it's like, we can't let this become the norm of how government acts. This is not how a government is supposed to act. You know, we talked about a little bit before about getting into a room to have a discussion. This isn't not having a discussion. This is putting a gun to someone's head, pun intended.
412-246-2002 to join the conversation with Mayor Peduto. Let's go to Casey in Greensburg. Casey, you're on Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you for taking my call. I just had a compliment for Mayor Peduto. I just want to tell you that years ago, I used to work at a little place called Elixir in the South Side, and I was young, and you had a campaign event there. And I thought at the time, what a really nice man. He would do a lot for the city. And I'm so glad you continue to run and that you're mayor. You've done so much for the city, for its people. Your passion is just amazing, and long may you reign. But if you ever run for governor or president, you have my vote. And I'm just really glad to see your work, and congratulations. That's all.
Okay. Well, Casey, first off, I got to get you out of Greensburg and get you back to Pittsburgh.
I did live in Pittsburgh for a long time. I went to school there, and I lived there, and I worked there. Moved back to Greensburg. Maybe I'll come back to Pittsburgh, as long as you're in charge.
Okay. The second thing is I'm not going to be running for any other offices. This is my Mecca. I remember that event. That was 2007, and I had to withdraw out of that race. There was just no viable way to win, and I couldn't put myself to making people go knock on doors and write checks and knowing that we were going to lose. But, you know, perseverance is a good thing. And sometimes you may think it's your time, but it's not. And sometimes time has a way of finding out when it is. And I couldn't be happier than to be the mayor right now. And I could never do another job where I would feel this way, even if it were a bigger office. Like I wouldn't be governor. I wouldn't have the same passion about being in charge of Philadelphia, and I wouldn't want to be one of 435 in Washington. So
you're a Pittsburgh guy, and
I'm not leaving. Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm going to stay here. So, yeah, I'm happy. This is what I wanted. But thank you for being there in 2007. You helped to lay the groundwork for 2013.
Don on Twitter asks, when can we start a clean the litter up campaign? And he put clean the litter up in quotes. If he really is from Pittsburgh, I wonder why he didn't say, why don't we start a red up the city campaign?
Yep. But he tried to stay away from that.
That's I guess right. so.
But he still had the up.
Yes, he did.
So thanks, Don. It starts tomorrow, quite honestly. I mean, we have a round table coming in. We've been noticing many, many more illegal dumping sites. And we've been using technology. We've actually been installing cameras and where you're getting license plate numbers and going after the folks. But that is, it's a problem. Every November we see it in western Pennsylvania when our hillsides show tires and refrigerators and all this other crap that people throw down the hillsides. On a neighborhood scale, I give credit to people like Boris Weinstein and others who have taken upon themselves to be able to not just take care of their neighborhood, but to network. And what we're going to be doing with our Public Works Department and the Pennsylvania Resource Council is give them more resources to be able to do even more. We could never hire enough public works employees to take care of the litter program. But if we empower people in communities to be able to do it and give them the tools to be able to do it and then coordinate it with them, then I think we have a shot at making the city the type of city we all want to live in. We've tried enforcement in the past. It's hit or miss, and you can't do it on a consistent basis, and enforcement doesn't work unless it's consistent. It really is more an issue of empowering those in the community that want to do more.
And along those lines, we have Kim on the line from Lawrenceville who wanted to discuss environmental issues. Kim, welcome.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. Are you there?
Yes.
Yep,
you're on the air.
Thanks. Mayor Peduto, it's important to me and my neighbors. I got a call I'm making. It's an SOS. When I moved in Lawrenceville on 57th and 207, mm-hmm. I noticed at night the smell of gas fumes. There's a big Sunoco Logistics right down here.
Yep, by 62nd.
And that has gone on every night, do the math, all those nights of breathing that air, roughly between 11 at night and 6 in the morning. Just very quickly, I've called EPA, DEP. I've spoken with Jim Thompson over the phone and in person at a meeting. I have called Dan Hopi.
Yeah.
Every time someone makes a move to try to test, the fume time changes, interestingly enough. So instead of 11 to 1, it suddenly becomes 3 to 6. It's roughly 2 to 3 hours that they release fumes. I've been told by neighbors they can smell them. My house has been tested. It's not my house. And nobody seems to want to do anything, but also it seems like the company is changing the times they release that pressure, depending on some kind of interaction or somebody tipping them off or something happening. But how can it be that from 7 years, 2007 to, nine years now.
Yeah. Let's do this because there's a couple different things that we can do. Number one is, have you talked to the folks over at Lawrenceville United?
I have not spoken with them yet.
We'll reach out to them. And then we actually have been partnering with Carnegie Mellon University, and this is a really good project for them. What we've done is we have the only memorandum of understanding between a university and a city in the country right now, which means we have an art research and development arm of city government that no other city government has, and they've got an urban lab that no other college has. And what that means for you? Detectors. So what we can do is we can install some detectors on our public pools working with Lawrenceville United, and it won't matter what time they're doing it because we'll be able to have the detectors on 24 hours, and we'll start to get some information to use as the baseline to help you with this.
Kim, thank you for that call. Let's talk about the strategy you're rolling out on immigration. You say that you would like to increase the city's population by 20,000 in the coming decade, and you've unveiled the Welcoming Pittsburgh Plan. Explain how this works.
Yeah, so Welcoming Pittsburgh was an initiative started a year ago. I think there were about 50 people who were a part of advisory panel, and they had meetings involving thousands of people, called all this information together, looked at best practice models that have been around the country, and got the input from people who are new residents of the city, as well as longstanding residents. And they basically broke it down into three areas: the welcome neighbor, the bridge to the city, and the prospering together. The welcome neighbor is a host. There's the 39 recommendations that came out of this, but it's a host of recommendations, everything from creating welcome hubs, revitalizing our sister cities network, which has been basically gone for a decade, hosting citizenship days, which we just did recently in City Hall for the first time, opening City Hall to where people were getting sworn in as new American citizens. We'll be doing that at least 2 years ago. Recreating the Pittsburgh Folk Festival, hosting new events to celebrate immigrant culture, all the little things that you think about that many different ethnicities have done while coming to Pittsburgh, or certainly my family and Italians have done it, making it more welcoming for the new folks who are coming from Africa and Asia and the Middle East and South America and the Caribbean to be able to do the same things. The second, the bridge to the city. It's establishing a welcome city employee resource group and expanding the city's civic engagement and leadership opportunities, basically committing to community policies that will help to make the city of Pittsburgh more welcoming. And the third, prospering together, is opening up business opportunities for those that are coming to Pittsburgh and showing them how to do it.
Pittsburgh now has the lowest percentage of immigration of America's top 40 metropolitan areas. How did this happen?
We died in 1979. I mean, you know, I always say it, in 1979, I started high school in Chartiers Valley. The Pirates won the World Series. The Steelers won their fourth Super Bowl, and Pittsburgh died. I mean, our economy was ripped out from us, and for 30 years, we've been basically going through the process of rebuilding, but we didn't have the jobs. So when immigrants were looking at different areas, they were choosing places like Toledo and Dayton before they were choosing Pittsburgh because there were jobs to be had. Now what we see, and this is a really, there's an amazing PowerPoint. I want to work with the Allegheny Conference on doing a joint press conference at some point to show it, where our economy is going to hit a severe crisis is in the next decade with the amount of people retiring and not enough people to make up the jobs because our generation is gone. Our friends all left during the 80s and the 90s, and they're people aged from 45 to 62, there aren't enough of us to be able to take it. And what we're starting to see is more millennials moving here and more immigrants moving here. But we've got to get a lot more of them because there's going to be a lot of jobs and we're not going to have people trained to take them. So this sort of works hand in hand. Where there's jobs, immigrants will go to. We want to make it so that the welcome mat's out because our economy is based upon those jobs being filled, both at a low skill and a high skill. And it all sort of fits together in the economic development model for this region. And the reason that we don't have the people is because our economy was so bad for so long.
Luke on Twitter asks, looking down the road 5 to 10 years, what are the city's two strengths? I don't know why he's limiting it to two, but if you had to pick the two top strengths,
five
what would they
to
be?
5 to 10 years, neighborhoods is going to be a big one because we're focusing in on housing and neighborhood business districts to be able to revitalize those. In the next 5 to 10 years, I think that we'll still be able to have, and that involves the quality of life, we'll still be able to have an affordable city. And people talk all the time about how housing is becoming less and less affordable. But if you go to other cities, and you see what unaffordable means. I mean, you can still buy a house in Pittsburgh for 40 grand in move-in condition. You can't get a garage in Seattle or San Francisco or Boston or New York or Washington, D.C. Or
even one of those micro houses.
Nothing. And so we're still going to have a capacity for affordable housing. I talked to Mayor Murray from Seattle about this. Here's Pittsburgh's unique dilemma. We've got 7,000 people who qualify for vouchers for federal assisted housing who we don't have housing for. And we have 13,000 lots and vacant housing and blighted housing that we own, the city owns. And somehow we have to wed those two. We've got to figure out a way to build a community-driven refurbishing and redoing the houses and building affordable houses on the lots in these areas and communities that lost 70-80% of their population. We have to hire local people from those neighborhoods to do it and teach them drywall and how to hang windows and how to fix a roof and how to do plumbing and electrical. And we've got to make those houses and that voucher not something that goes into a rent with an out-of-state developer in a warehouse of poverty, but goes to equity, to owning that property, so that when the value of that neighborhood goes up, and we're going to make value of neighborhoods go up, because what's displaced more people in Pittsburgh than gentrification is disinvestment, then that person has a stake in the city. They have the equity of owning their own home, and they can either sell it and make money or choose to stay and be in the good times. That model has to happen, and we are in a unique position, the Rust Belt mainly, in a unique position to create that new model. So HUD has to change their rules. We need to get some assistance from the state, and then we have to make it a priority internally. And if we can get those three things happening, then that in the next 5 or 10 years, what you'll see.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Our guest, Mayor Bill Peduto, with us until the end of the hour. We'll get to more of your calls and tweets coming up. This is Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and my guest is Pittsburgh Mayor Bill Peduto, making his monthly appearance on the program, 412-246-2002, to join the conversation. We'll get to some more calls and tweets shortly. I did want to make sure that we talked about Governor Tom Wolf's Task Force on Municipal Pensions has released some recommendations. You say that while the recommendations don't contain every pension change that you would like to see, it's an important start. So what are you seeing in here that you like? What else would you like to see, Mayor Peduto?
Well, what I like seeing is that he's recognizing that it is a real problem that's facing every city in the state of Pennsylvania. It goes through a lot of the common sense approaches of allowing cities to... We have one-fourth of all the pension plans in the United States are in the state of Pennsylvania. One-fourth of all the municipal pension plans. We have pension plans with 10 and whatever. With pulling them together, looking at the ways that they're funded, and then being able to put some common sense approaches on the limits that employees can get with it. It's called spiking, using your overtime to determine your pay, parts that are in there. What's missing, we need to, for new employees, move away from the defined benefit program to a defined contribution plan, not for anybody who's been
like
promised
a 401k?
That. Yes, yes. And the reason that we need to do so is otherwise we're going to have distressed pension plans forever.
And that is a very valid point. The governor makes that point too. But you, I'm sure you realize that there are people sitting out there who are used to these great pensions and thinking, and who just absolutely hate this.
Every single employee that has a pension right now will be given the pension that they got when they started work. Those that will start in a new job would be given a different one. And the idea with that is that it will preserve the pensions that have been promised to those that are working now. We can't promise that. I have 20 years of city government work. I'd like to get my pension plan. I can't even promise myself that I'm going to have it if we continue under the system we have. The system we have is like a boat with a hole in the bottom, and the bucket is not as big as the hole. And you cannot solve a credit problem by throwing more credit at it. We've done that. Back in the 1990s, we borrowed $300 million, did pension bonds. That now has us in a city paying 20% of our annual operating budget, just paying off old debt. We looked at redoing some of the rules internally, but we don't have the power to do that because the state limits it back in 2004 under First Act 47. And in 2009, we took the revenue from our parking and put it into the pension plans, and we'll be putting even more in 2019. So we've tried to solve a credit problem with credit. It's not solvable. What we need to do is change the program, and only Harrisburg can do that.
412-246-2002. We've got about 10 minutes left in the program, so we're going to try to move through the many people waiting to talk to you on the phones as quickly as we possibly can, because there are other things we'd like to get to. So we'll start with, and we'll get to everybody. We'll start with Margo in Highland Park, who's been waiting for quite some time. Margo, welcome. You're on with Mayor Peduto.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I want to echo what one of the other callers said, that it was really nice to have our vote count this time, because we're really pleased with what you're doing in the city.
Thanks, Margo.
First of all, the bike lanes have been great because we are huge into cycling. But, of course, there are lots of people who are not real happy about it. So my first question is, how are you going to promote it so that people, you know, get the sense of why you're doing this, how important it is for the city, not only with bringing money in, but our reputation?
Yeah.
Second of all, I wanted to let you know my husband, who's an economics teacher, thinks it's great that you use economic terms whenever you're talking about the city, because we certainly do need somebody who knows about money and how to work it. And then my second question is about the Larimer neighborhood. You talked about the importance of Larimer. We have a property there that we are conscientious landlords of, but we see what's going on there. We see that there's people talking about homes coming in that are over $200,000. We understand what you're trying to do there, but we are very worried about gentrification. And so if you could speak to Larimer specifically and traffic in the area, which is becoming untenable.
All right, Margo, thank you.
So first off, on the bikes, it's not only about the bikes, it's about complete streets. And, you know, Davy Lawrence back in 1940s and 50s decided to build the downtown around the automobile. And so it's designed for that, which means it's very unsafe to ride a bike. It's very unsafe to walk. And if you're a person with needs, you can't really get around. If you travel to other cities, if you look at the models, they create models for all modes. And that's what we want to do in our most congested areas and then throughout our neighborhoods as well. And you'll start noticing there's more audible signals and countdowns that are being put in for people to walk and for people with disabilities. The bike lanes are going in so that the cars and the bikes are separated, making it safer for both, not for one, but for both. And we're working to create a complete streets model for all of downtown and for Oakland. Like I said, starting with the most congested areas, then moving out to the others. On Larimer, it's a mixed income. And this is part of the community's plan. The community didn't want just low income. They wanted a plan to see their neighborhood come back with mixed incomes, meaning there's going to be market rate housing that is going to be $200,000. But there's also going to be federally assisted housing created as well as affordable housing. It will be a mix of all three. The development that's happening right now not only will be affordable, but it will also be the greenest development we're building in the city. So the greenest neighborhood in the city won't be Squirrel Hill or Shadyside. It's going to be Larimer. We have 103 houses that we own that we're looking to creating a mixed use between market affordable and assisted. And we are looking at converting the old school into senior affordable housing as well. The other issue?
Gentrification?
Nope, that was that one.
Oh,
economics? Tell your husband I got a D, I think, micro.
The economics of the economic
I just never believed it. They're like, no, that's not an externality. That affects people. So I appreciate that I'm able to use the terms, but I think that was really going back and getting my master's in working in public economics and taking a couple courses that I struggled through, but at that time I got an A-.
Well, sounds like she gave you an A+. Tim from East Liberty, you're on with Mayor Peduto.
Good afternoon, Mayor.
Tim?
Mayor, I want to ask you, what's the city doing to get ready for the winter? After I've seen what happened to Boston last winter and the rest of the cities in this country,
Well, Tim, that's an interesting question, and maybe it's too soon to ask But when you think about how much rain we're getting, if that were snow,
we would be like Boston. Mayor Walsh, I mean, I talked to him about it, too. There was nothing they could do. Once you get behind in a snow, in just one snowstorm, you're done, because then it just turns to ice. But on top of that, and every single day, that was just horrendous. We did a post game after the winter ended. Seemed like it wasn't going to, but at the end of March. And now what we do, I have an assistant director of public works who came in from Deloitte. This guy does systems analysis. He's a guy who we haven't had in that type of position before. And we are remapping all of the routes. We're using the data that we collected last year from when we put the GPS on them. We're coming up with more efficient routes. We're working with the county to have surplus stations for salt so we don't run into what happened 2 years ago where we get in a situation where we have to ration salt. We'll have additional salt in different locations, even outside of the city, in cooperation with the county. And we're going through our equipment leasing right now to find out what is needed in each of our different divisions for equipment-wise, not just with the big trucks, but also with pickup trucks as well, and outfitting them with plows as needed. So there's a whole bunch of stuff. He's right. This is the time you prepare. You don't deal with that stuff in winter. It's too late.
The Steelers are planning to put in a bid to host the 2023 Super Bowl at Heinz Field. There has been one outdoor Super Bowl held in a usually cold northern city. That was 2 years ago in New Jersey. Can Pittsburgh realistically host a Super Bowl? And we have a tweet from Ryan who says he doesn't believe the city's infrastructure is prepared for the traffic that would come from a Super Bowl. How would PennDOT handle such a large volume of people in Pittsburgh? What changes would have to be made?
Boy, there would be a lot. And I saw Ryan's tweets too earlier today. You've got so much that would have to be done that it would go beyond just like hosting a parade. I mean, it's well beyond just the city. That's why the county executives involved, the state would have to be involved. Our bottom line is we want to make sure that we have an equal bottom line. We don't want to have to go in debt in order to throw a party. So, you know, there would have to be a lot of different stakeholders that would be partners within this. Why it's worth pursuing? Two reasons. Number one, football in Western Pennsylvania. There's very few places in this country where it's part of the culture like it is here. I mean, it basically is part of everything from Friday nights to Saturday afternoons to Sundays. It's a part of the culture, peewee football all the way up. So there's something that is true and real about Pittsburgh and football that needs to be pursued. The second is the Rooney family. I have to believe that if they ask this, and, you know, this isn't until 2023, there's a very good likelihood that the NFL owners would be supportive of it. We meet the criteria for the 90-mile radius for hotel rooms. There would have to be additional seating that would be created, either temporary or permanent, as part of that. And there would have to be a heck of a lot of planning that would have to be done along what Ryan's saying. All of that would be discussions that would happen over the course of the next 4 years while the NFL makes that decision. That wouldn't be something that would happen until 8 years later.
And you would still be mayor then, I think.
Who knows?
Assuming, well, you know, if assuming that you're clearly interested in continuing, so assuming that that you are reelected, and you don't probably want to assume that, but a lot of people would, I'm sure that's something that you would like to be presiding over.
There's a lot of things I'd like to be presiding over. I would choose a light rail system throughout Allegheny County, ribbon cutting over a Super Bowl, though.
Nettie on Twitter says, I really enjoyed being a part of the 2016 CAP Budget Deliberative Forum. What other events like this can I get involved in? We're down to about 30 seconds.
Okay, so Nettie, thank you for doing that. And we had several hundred people come out and say, these are the priorities that I want to see in the city. And we're going to continue doing this. We had it all over the city. We'll continue to do it. Check the city's website for it. We did the same thing with our police chief. We used that as one of the metrics in choosing who our police chief would be, taking the community's input. And we're going back and starting our Mayor's Night Out, Mayor's Night In, and Mayor's Night Online. So those things will all be occurring within this late summer and throughout the fall and early winter.
Mayor Bill Peduto has been our guest for this entire hour of Essential Pittsburgh.
We didn't even get to talk about Phil Kessel.
What did you think of the trade?
I was happy. Not at first, but now starting to think about it. But we still need, I think, a bruiser on wing. I'd like to see Chris Stewart in a Penguin uniform.
Would you rather have Brandon Saad?
No. Actually, yeah. I like Saad a lot, but the skill set of Kessel is so much greater, and what they wanted for Saad was too much to give up.
There you have it. Mayor Peduto, thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you in August.
Thank you.
Wednesday, July 15th, 90.5 WESA is holding a community forum on the impact of the Americans with Disabilities Act on our city. It'll take place here at the Community Broadcast Center, broadcast live on 90.5 WESA. Register now at WESA.FM. Until tomorrow, I'm Paul Guggenheimer. So long for now.